Andy, welcome on the podcast.
Jake, it's great to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you too. Thank you. You made the first question really easy because you wrote a book a number of years ago that was very influential for me at the time, and it's called Why Buy Bitcoin? So Andy, why should you buy Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's makes me think, because do I give the long answer or the short answer?
Whatever comes to mind.
You know, the short answer is there's too much debt. And in a world of too much debt, they got to print more money. And in a world where they're going to print more money, you want to own the hardest money that's available to you. And that used to be gold, but today it's Bitcoin. So that's the short story. And then obviously the longer story is, oh, how did we get here? You know, how is it that in a fiat money system, which we've lived with for 50 plus years, how did the debt accumulate? How did we run giant deficits that accumulated over time and got bigger and bigger? And oh, meanwhile, in a debt-based economy where interest rates get held too low, how does debt accumulate at the personal level and the corporate level and the government level? And then, oh, shouldn't all this make you want to buy gold? And yeah, it probably should. By the way, unpopular opinion for a Bitcoin podcast is pretty bullish on gold. But for every dollar that accrues to gold, you know, that's just another dollar for Bitcoin to eat in the future, in my humble opinion. So I found a way to score the characteristics of gold and Bitcoin and the dollar in terms of being monetary assets. And surprise, surprise, I found that Bitcoin already outscored the dollar when we published 5.5 years ago. And frankly, with the way the world's gone since then, the thesis has continued to play out, and maybe even faster than I anticipated.
And so the book was released 2019.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, cool.
September 2nd, 2019.
Awesome. What an amazing time to have done it in some senses. What resonated mostly for me was that I was like heavily researching Bitcoin. We touched on this just a little before we started the call, but in my mid-20s, I inherited money after my father had died, and I was experienced in dealing with people like yourself, i.e. financial advisors. So if you've got a family that has money, what do you do with it? And in the book, you started talking about things like Sharpe ratios and how risk-adjusted rate is so amazing, like any portfolio essentially is going to start looking pretty good. And I was like, that's the kind of language I recognize. Now, I'm not a fund manager myself, and I've never been a financial advisor myself, but it's important if you have money, you need to make the decision what to do with it. And I'm very different now than I was 10 years ago. But I didn't know of many Bitcoin-focused materials back then that had that kind of lens. A lot's changed in 5.5 years, because I think it's fair to say that the rest of the financial industry is catching up really, really fast. Were you like the only person talking about that kind of thing back then?
Well, I will say that I was the only wealth manager to have published a book on Bitcoin. And I think that's actually still true today. Although I think Morgan Richard is going to put one out before too long. And I'm sure that one will be great because she's really smart on Bitcoin and really smart on wealth management. But yes, it was lonely out there at the time. It was, as you might expect, a fight with my business partners to get Bitcoin included in clients' portfolios, because yes, wealth managers who were bullish on Bitcoin and were willing to go out on a limb, so to speak, and add Bitcoin to their clients' portfolios were at least few and far between. I'm not going to say non-existent, because they did exist, but they were rare. Quite rare as hen's teeth, as they say.
Well, and that's why I loved your book so much, because I was like, oh my God, traditional investment lens meets Bitcoin and it works. Great. You know what I mean? I needed that clarification.
Yeah, it fit surprisingly well into, as you say, the classic metrics that investors use, that wealth managers use, because you can say, oh, I believe in a diversified portfolio. Like that works in the long run, or let's say it has worked in the long run historically. The future, what do they say? Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future, but it has worked in the past in terms of risk and return. And if you included Bitcoin in a portfolio up to that point, it just was very beneficial to the overall characteristics of the portfolio, whether it was risk, whether it was return. And by the way, we could talk about risk as volatility or risk as permanent loss of capital. But suffice to say that portfolios with Bitcoin did better up to the point of publication. And it turns out they have done better since then in the 5.5 years that have elapsed.
Wow. And what's fun as well is, so if you could rewind the clock, like how did you actually get Bitcoin in people's portfolios then? And how different does that look today?
Yeah. Well, I think that it definitely looks different. So if you just wanted to buy it in a brokerage account, really the only option was GBTC, right? The Bitcoin Trust. Mm-hmm. I think there were Bitcoin miners, mining companies that were public, although I couldn't tell you off the top of my head which ones they were. And then, of course, the question was, well, what if you wanted to buy actual coins and you're a client? And the risk to financial advisors, to wealth managers back then was there was some uncertainty about how the SEC was going to treat you and what was required in the disclosures and what potential liability there was. And that was, that had nothing to do with the general public's view that, oh, this is for criminals, right? Only scumbags use Bitcoin. Like, you don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. Yeah. So, yeah, so for, rat poison. For sure. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And one of the things, exactly, rat poison squared. One of the things that I did in the intervening time between when the book was published and today was build a product for financial advisors. I did that for Swan Bitcoin. And it really didn't exist at the time. And it was a heavy lift. We got it done, but it wasn't easy. And then, of course, since then, you know, now you have the ETFs. The ETFs provide price exposure. Of course, that's not the same as holding your own keys. Mm. And I've had conversations with clients. The vast majority are not ready and able to hold their own keys. But let me tell you, they're thinking more about it. They're getting more keen on it. One model that I've seen lately is getting younger family members involved, right? Maybe mom and dad aren't so keen on holding their keys, but maybe they're willing to get their kids involved. And then, of course, now we have collaborative custody models that did, you know, some of which did exist at the time, some of which did not, like multi-institution custody, like something like an OnRamp does, you know, which I spent about a year helping them address the wealth management market with. But yeah, for sure, the number of available options has greatly increased in the meantime. And that's one of the strengths of Bitcoin is base layer Bitcoin, because it's software, allows you to build all these interesting products that suit the particular need of the particular user in a unique way that that almost nothing else in the world is able to do.
It's so fundamental a shift to how families can look after their wealth, isn't it? I mean, it cannot be overemphasized how important it is. What even is the financial industry? Why is it there? And the more that you start really peeling it back, it's like, hang on, so these guys are basically moving money around, getting paid fees for it. And the only reason the supposed performance of portfolios look any good is because of the inflationary monetary policy. Like, what's actually under the hood of these portfolios? And I remember so clearly, I'd go and have meetings with wealth managers and I'd feel like I was being really clever. They're a nice office in London. You have a lunch with someone, they're in a suit and tie and they take you through your portfolio and you've got all this stuff and you have no idea what it is. You know, index linked things and interest rate things. And even the money manager that's talking to you, they don't know themselves, right? Because they're not the fund manager. They're just the relationship manager. And so it's this big kind of merry-go-round of people that appear to be creating value, but like, are they? And it exists because of the problem of like, well, actually, I can't really just keep all my wealth in gold because someone will just come and steal it off me. And so you end up with that centralization problem where people are like, well, I'm going to trust a custodian. And then you take on the whole, you know, fractional reserve banking, etc. So how do some of your clients now view Bitcoin? And have they really caught up to this idea of like how transformative it is? Like, basically, yeah, it's really hard to steal your shit.
And look, if Bitcoin reaches its potential, then I'm not going to say I'm out of a job, but the investment aspect, mm-hmm, the keeping ahead of inflation aspect, right, of the wealth management job will be severely reduced, severely curtailed. Financial advice and financial planning are likely to still remain relevant, you know, although much of that may get automated. I won't go down, you know, go down that rabbit hole right now. But yeah, let's just say that, as you say, staying ahead of inflation in a fiat world is hard. And up to this point, a lot of people have been happy to pay someone like me to do it for them. I will say that we're still really early with respect to clients understanding what Bitcoin is. It's a tiny minority of my clients that understand how impactful, you know, how the foundation of finance could be shaken if, or will be shaken if, Bitcoin reaches its full potential. I think we're kind of in the digital gold stage right now. The, oh yeah, this thing's not going to die. Okay, the government's probably not going to kill it. It's still crazy volatile, but I can see how it's a substitute for gold. So if I want to own hard money, then I want to own some gold and I want to own some Bitcoin. That's like, I think, where the average client of mine is. So suffice to say that we've started on the journey, but it's early days and there's quite a ways to go.
Interesting. And I always love asking about that kind of specifically, in that you can read all this information, right? All the different media sources or podcasts, but actually, like, what do people actually think? And so you're able to slightly teach me that. For people listening out there who won't necessarily have met you before, Andy, like, when you say my client, like, what does that actually look like? What do they come to you for? From memory, you had a family management business that's been in the family for a generation. Is that still the business that you're running? And just teach us a bit about, like, what it is you're doing.
Yeah. So my firm, which is called Westcap Group, is a registered investment advisor, which means we are fiduciaries and we manage people's wealth. So that's one thing we do. And we do essentially full service financial planning as well. We do not give tax advice. So that's one thing that we don't do. But basically, if you have assets to invest, we will invest them for you and we'll do financial planning for you. And you're right that the firm was founded by my father and his founding partner, gosh, I want to say 36 years ago. And I joined the firm 12 and a half years ago. So yes, it's the family business, and also we manage money for families. And our typical client, we manage a few million bucks for. You know, there's a range around that, but basically that's the idea. And it's most asset classes, including alternatives. It kind of runs the gamut. And so generally speaking, people want to entrust their financial situation with us for the long run. And that's kind of how we operate.
Cool. The long run is obviously the game, right? There's no point taking advice from someone who's making a quick buck. And so how have discussions developed with your average customer in regards to Bitcoin? So they obviously have heard of Bitcoin. Have you managed to get them to all have some kind of exposure to it? And when you help them with that, are people quite specific about, okay, now just take the ETF and a percent or two, or do they want to own it in self-custody?
Yeah, so the way this went was, just for my personal experience, so I was class of 2017. I rode the bull market up and crashed into the bear. Mm. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to test my own thesis on Bitcoin, and then also to put it in front of clients as my research justifying them owning it, right?
Yeah.
So awesome. The dynamic was, it may have been the day of publication or maybe the day after that I bought for them the Bitcoin Trust, okay? And the conversation was, I've done the research, dear client. yes, you think this is a, you know, a flaming pile because it's just dumped from 20K to 3K. It's had a typical bear market downturn. But please read this and then let's talk about it. And so I immediately bought a tiny position. I don't remember what it was at the time, for everybody, or pretty much everybody. There may have been exceptions. There were very few who pushed back and said, no, I don't want to touch this thing. Basically reverse the trade. And then over time, we scaled in and bought more as we had conversations with clients. And at this point today, there are still a precious few clients that don't want to own it. And so we're essentially prohibited explicitly. But it's a core part of the client's portfolio. And then the set of clients that have actual outright coins rather than the ETF today is much, much smaller. Wow. That's a, you know, that's, like I said, an ongoing education process. As you know from experience yourself, I mean, it's much more complicated, I would say, figuring out how to walk a client through the best way for them to own coins. You know, the possibilities are not endless, but they're complex with respect to self-custody and collaborative custody and all the rest. So that's, we're still really early in that game. And look, to be honest with you, I don't get too excited about the potential for personal liability associated with giving someone advice, right, on how to hold the keys, because if they screw it up, you know, I worry a little bit about getting sued, to be honest with you.
And totally fair enough. It's one of the interesting nuances of the process. Like, okay, well, even if you understand that having Bitcoin in self-custody is the best way to own it because of the safety aspects to it, can you actually deliver on that? And when you're talking about, you know, multiple figures, it starts to get really painful if you get it wrong. And more often than not, the mistakes are in-house, like the chance of fire, the chance of theft, the chance of flooding, very, very small. The chance that you've lost the treasure map that you created for yourself, or that you made the treasure map too complicated and there's suddenly a passphrase on there that you're like, shit. One of my friends was like 11 o'clock at night, couldn't get into his Bitcoin, like in tears. You know, you're like, I cannot believe I've got this so wrong. It was a funny story when he told it to me. But you're right. Yeah, I got to ask,
what, did it work out okay?
Yeah, he figured it out.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. Touch wood. you do hear these horror stories. And even for myself, like once I'd used a Bitcoin exchange in the UK, I was sending Bitcoin from the exchange to my own wallet, and it had left the account of the exchange but didn't turn up in the wallet, and I couldn't find it. And it transpired it was a public holiday because of a bank holiday in the UK, and the exchange operations team just hadn't come in and clicked the button because it was a certain quantity of Bitcoin. But like, talk about losing your wallet, you know? It's like a couple of credit cards, maybe a bit of cash. Like, this time around, you're like, oh my God, you idiot. What have you done? You know, all the worst things cross your mind. So I'm with you that there's a problem there. What I'm intrigued about is, what are some of the better solutions then? So if you do make an allocation today for a client, are you giving them different options as to how to own it? Or do you just say, I think this is the best way?
Yeah, I mean, conversations happen. To be honest with you, the conversation's more along the lines of, I'm going to buy it in the ETF form, you know, in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. And if you want to own it additionally, which you should, and by the way, it's a different dynamic. Some clients have come to me having already bought their Bitcoin position, and they're saying, okay, you know, I got my self-custody piece, but I also want to own some normie fiat assets, so to speak. So that happens. And then the reverse is a conversation that I've been having that I hadn't had very often, but I'm having more frequently with time, is the, hey, you know, basically I'm nudging people a little bit more firmly. You know, you might want to consider actually being able to access your coins and self-custody, whether it's self-custody at the outset with single sig wallet or signing device, or whether it's collaborative custody, or whether it's a third-party custodian, you know, multi-sig or not, but at least you can get the coins out, hopefully on short notice in future. And I mean, you mentioned the, I can't remember which advantage you mentioned a moment ago about owning actual coins.
Well, just I guess the safety of it. It's like,
and there's also, yeah, there's other,
that's it.
That's right. That's right. If they're custodied by you, your keys are your coins. But there's other advantages too. I mean, there's still a tax advantage, which is, I believe you could still, if you buy and price goes down, I believe you can sell and rebuy instantly, more or less, and realize the loss and take that loss, which is an asset. And then, of course, it's still early days, but the credit market for borrowing against actual coins, I still think that's likely to be more advantageous than the market for borrowing against paper Bitcoin, so to speak, like the ETFs or otherwise. It's still early days, so that statement is not true, but I'm still optimistic that we're going to get a properly functioning Bitcoin collateralized credit market that doesn't have high interest rates and can't liquidate you with tight stops, essentially. We're not there yet, but I'm seeing things develop. So I guess I may have lost the thread here, but oh yeah, so all of these options, you know, are discussed. Do you want to hold it yourself? Do you want to set up a multisig? Do you want to do collaborative custody where you've got, you know, control? Or do you want to have a multisig solution with a third party? Or, you know, do you just want to buy some coins on, you know, Coinbase or Swan or whoever? So all of the above are options. And frankly, that makes life harder, not easier, right? Because the right tailored solution for any person, whether they're a client or otherwise, could be different on a case-by-case basis.
The more you know, the more you buy. So your portfolio allocations are changing. But then equally, like, how you store your Bitcoin changes over time too. Because it needs to, frankly, if the percentage of your portfolio alters with it. It's like, well, you need to be absolutely fucking sure that if you were hit by a bus tomorrow, someone gets this stuff. And I'm someone who spent like countless hours thinking about that. And that's also because
me too, by the way.
Right. I came at this from a long-term wealth management perspective. It's like, how do I know that the next generation are going to get this in the best possible way if something was to go wrong? And I think it's absolutely possible to do it. There's no doubt about that. What I'm intrigued about, Andy, is like the, you know, when you say financial planning, like, what does that actually mean? The context here being of like, you might have a will, right? And a solicitor helps you write that will, and it's you and your wife together. And you say, right, if I die, I give all my stuff to my wife. If my wife and I are both dead, then we split it between our kids three ways. And in the traditional world, that piece of paper, arbitrated by a judicial system with a qualified lawyer, is how you figure out who's got what. But Bitcoin changes that. Because if you haven't got the keys, it doesn't fucking matter what that piece of paper says. And so I'm intrigued as to how you see things developing when it comes to like bringing kids into the fold earlier than perhaps might have been the case before. And it's like, you need to understand how this key management process works, because this is how you get your inheritance. And it's extremely important that it gets right. And I wonder, like, will we see, you know, and I don't know any family that's managed to navigate the like the death of someone without there being some squabble about who owns what. It's like, because it's very hard to chop up a house. Very hard to like chop up a company. Whereas like Bitcoin, it's pretty simple. Yep, cool. Who gets what? And in theory, I think that providing the leadership at the top of families, that is, you know, deceased or about to die, sets the rules how they want and makes that clear to everyone, then the problem of inheritance, I think, becomes much, much easier. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I do. In some ways, I agree with you. But, you know, let me push back a little bit. So first of all, obviously you're talking about estate planning, and estate planning is a piece of financial planning. Retirement planning is another piece of financial planning. You know, there's several adjacent areas that we that all get folded into wealth management, I would say. And on the estate planning front, yeah, a question is the old statement, you know, code is law. Okay. Or, you know, not your keys, not your coins. So really the power belongs to the holder. And that's true. as a matter of fact. However, the legal system will still have its say, at least for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. So I guess you could draw the analogy to any bearer asset, right? It's different with a bank account or a brokerage account where, yeah, there's a third party and they respond to moves by lawyers. And if there's a legal document, whether it's a will or a trust, you know, you serve that up to them and the appropriate party should get their money. I think you could say, well, yeah, but what if instead you had the cash buried in the backyard or in a safe or the gold buried or in a safe or something? That to me can still happen. And Bitcoin is more analogous to that situation. In other words, Bitcoin's not new and unique in that regard. Although obviously there's a bunch of different ways that you can secure coins that give it more flexibility. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm of two minds on this. One is there's the immediate estate planning need. And, you know, that's clear for any family that has a substantial amount of Bitcoin. Oh, and by the way, substantial today will likely be more substantial tomorrow, because as it approaches its potential, of course, the value goes up by a lot. At least it has so far, historically. The second issue is just, should a citizen of the 21st century know how to use private keys? And I think the answer to that is yes. If you want to maintain your freedom and sovereignty in a world of rampant AI plus governments doing strange things plus the internet eating more of the economy, like if those assumptions hold true and they just continue to play out, then yeah, you know, every person who is physically and mentally capable ought to learn how to manage private keys, because these are potentially one of the most important tools for life, the way the world's going. So there's those two components, and they're separate and discrete, but they're both important. And I think, you know, I think it's really early days. You know, I'm trying to help my clients find their way and figure it out. But the learning component, I feel, is very important. And there's the other aspect, which, as you know, given that story you told about, you know, the fear of executing a transfer and it not working, there's no substitute for actually doing it, trying out. I have one of those stories myself too, although it wasn't overnight. It wasn't an extended period of time. It was when I was moving coins on chain, and it just happened to be a really long block that, yeah, I was like, where's the money? I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm waiting a few minutes and then I'm waiting 10 minutes and I don't know, maybe it was 20 minutes or something. And maybe there was some latency on the Block Explorer I was using. And yeah, I was sweating by the end of that, because I had in my mind,
I know the feeling. Yeah.
More or less instantaneous transfer. And yeah, anyway. So yeah, there was another transaction I sent early days when I was learning things. And I think I just picked too low a fee. And yeah, I hadn't figured out that, you know, that it'll just sit there in the mempool and wait to get picked up. And if you set the fee too low, you could be waiting for a while. So anyway, all these things, there's no substitute for learning by doing.
Correct.
And so, you know, it's still a heavy lift with people, because you have to say, look, do you agree that it's really important that you can control your own funds? Yes, yes, I agree, says the client. Okay, well, it's going to take you a number of hours to run the traps, learn the basics, fool around with paper wallets, fool around with hardware wallets, move money around in small amounts, you know, figure out how this whole thing works, you know, let alone multi-sig or, you know, collab custody. Like, that's another level up. And it's, you know, it's hard still to convince people that they should spend the time and that it's worth it, especially if they're later in life, they're retirees, they figure they've won the game, you know, they're set for the future, they've done all the right things, they've saved and invested, and they got enough assets and, you know, let the next generation worry about it. And so that's when you get into, okay, how do you involve the next generation? You know, how do you set up some kind of collaboration so the kids are aware of what's going on. And yeah, all this stuff takes time and effort. It's hard.
Interesting. Absolutely reasonable feedback about like cash or gold. If a family member is about to die and they go and sneak, you know, 50% of their wealth in cash into their favorite's back pocket without anyone mm-hmm. noticing, that's a failure of leadership in some ways. If no one realizes that that's happened. So Bitcoin could be done the same. And I'm not bearish on the judicial system. Like, I don't think that's necessarily going to blow up tomorrow. So, okay, I'm with you there. That makes a lot of sense. And so, Andrew, what would be cool to go next is...
I'm curious, by the way, you know, if you don't mind turning it on you. I mean, you've had some experience helping people figure this out, helping families figure this out. I mean, where... Mm. Have you been involved in it recently? I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, great question. So when I kicked off Bitcoin with Jake in 2022, and it lasted for about 12 months, I did 80 or so episodes, of which you kindly joined me then, it transpired to be a big piece of primary research. And through that experience, I had some sponsors and things like that, and it ended up turning into a startup opportunity when I joined the Bitcoin Advisor. And the whole like ethos of that company is there's high net wealths out there that want to own actual Bitcoin, and let's try and help them do that. And so, yes, absolutely. I've been involved in a number of conversations with people over the last however many years about like, A, what is Bitcoin? B, why should you try and own it? And yep. They're all different. Like every person is different. They made their money in a different way. They're a different age. They have more kids, less kids, no kids. And therefore, every conversation is in a way a bespoke solution. What I found, I guess, is that ultimately you just have to make decisions for yourself. So I'm not a wealth manager. What happened with the Bitcoin Advisors, it didn't work out. I was with the business for 8 weeks and then left. I then got involved with the Bitcoin Mentor. We tried to set up a subsidiary here in Australia. And that was more like selling consultancy hours for expertise. Yep. And I had a few kind of like discovery calls, and then, you know, things just didn't work out there either. And so again, I moved on. The conversations, like, I don't know, some people are really ready to listen, and others are still like, I'm really good at what I do and I'm not really that interested. Does that make sense?
100%. 100%.
So, and like the ETFs, I mean, to my mind, they have changed everything, really, when it comes to that like high net wealth exposure problem. It's like before the ETFs, I've got a friend here in Australia as well that had a digital assets fund. And yes, he was playing around buying Binance Coin and other stuff in that, but it was a way for someone to get exposure to Bitcoin because they could buy into the fund.
Yep.
I would have said that the ETFs have completely destroyed that business model overnight. And equally, those crypto investments probably haven't done too well. Yep. And then equally, like the collaborative custody model of the Bitcoin Advisor, like 1%, that's actually pretty lumpy when you've got large value in there. And equally, you've got to ask permission to move like this 2 of 3 multi-sig. And it's like, you've got to call someone up and say, can you move my Bitcoin? It's like, you've completely destroyed the idea of permissionless money. You were with OnRamp. When I look at that business, I'm like, okay, so multi-institutional, just lots of trust in there. Do I trust that? I'm not a customer of OnRamp. That's not to say it's not a good business or not interesting to some people. So ultimately, I've ended up creating my own treasure map, and I use a multi-sig that's geographically dispersed. And I'm very, very comfortable with how that looks. So, I mean, if there's anyone out there that's going to try and come steal from me, like, you can try, but it's going to be really, 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 really hard. Yep. And that's exactly how it should be. Like some personal pain points that I hit, for example, like, as soon as you're in a collaborative custody environment and you've got to ask someone permission, like the Bitcoin Advisor, very specifically, I left under, let's just say, like pretty unceremonious, fast, it's done, you're out. But they had a key of mine. And it's like you'd started a bank with someone and you put your money in the bank, but then you weren't part of the bank. You're like, shit, what happens now? Well, actually, what was pretty straightforward is I contacted the multi-sig provider. I did a sweep of all the keys. And before you know it, I was back in control of all 3 keys and we move on. That was actually a moment where I was like, God, this thing is so powerful. Like, what in the hell just happened then? But at the same time, yes. Oh, there's more questions than answers at this stage, I think. And it's always horses for courses.
Yep. And look, I hope your catalog of episodes is still available, because
it is, absolutely.
Recommend people check it out. I definitely was a listener back in the day, because when you popped on my radar, you know, always whenever someone asks me on, I always check out their existing catalog. Like, who is this guy? Do I want anyone to do with this person? And I was impressed at the time. So yeah, highly recommend people check out that catalog.
Thank you. And so, Andy, to spin it to yourself again, then, it's inevitable when you get into Bitcoin that you're like, what does Bitcoin need? And maybe you've made your own reallocation and you're like, okay, I think I'm comfortable with that at this point. Well, there's, you know, how do you rebuild wealth management for Bitcoin? How do you, you know, like you got involved in some Bitcoin companies, much like myself. What's that experience been like for you? Do you have any like burning ideas that you want to go and build on your own? And I'd love to know kind of what was really obvious to you that worked well and what didn't work so well.
Yeah, I love that question. So for me, you know, I published the book partly as a test of the thesis, partly to help my clients, friends and family, et cetera. And that was kind of the beginning of the Bitcoin focused or Bitcoin only journey for me. And then, you know, I built a product for Swan, and that was cool. It was hard. I learned a lot, but it was also a reminder of the risks, or some of the risks in the sector, which is, first of all, just getting a functional product, you know, that's safe, that works, standing is a challenge. And then secondly, you got to sell it. And then thirdly, you got to, you know, really be certain that that your partners, including anyone involved in custody, are solid. Turned out in the case of Swan, you know, that they weren't. Swan had to switch custodians. So that was a challenge. And then obviously the business is notoriously cyclical. And so there's cycles of boom and bust. And so, you know, one of the lessons is working full time and basically entrusting your whole career to this space and this asset. It's really hard. It's really hard because of the cyclicality, and it's hard because, frankly, there's so many rabid Bitcoiners who want to work in Bitcoin that it's a little bit like, I don't know, it's a little bit like pro sports. Like, you know, everyone wants to play in the NBA, but it's pretty tough to compete. It's open to anyone, right, technically, but supply of talent is really high, and demand for talent or realistic opportunities that are likely to succeed are pretty rare. And if we're honest about it, we look at what business models have survived and thrived so far. They're really few and far between. I mean, there are some mining companies that make money, although that's really cyclical. And, you know, there aren't too many that have survived multiple cycles or created value over multiple cycles. Obviously, you've got exchanges. But if you're only selling one asset, if you're selling Bitcoin only, well, you know, just making money on that transaction is a challenge. If you're trying to loop Bitcoin into overall wealth management, you know, that's an ongoing problem, not least because if Bitcoin reaches its potential, you know, then what do you need a financial manager to manage your investments for? Oh, and by the way, as a practical matter, anyone who really understands Bitcoin from the client side is mostly going to want to own Bitcoin, right? They don't want to have that much exposure to a lot of other assets. And then the financial planning, yes, some are unique to Bitcoin. Yes, some are bespoke, but building an entire business around that is a challenge. Now, there are some who have done it. I mean, I know some wealth managers who have built entire businesses or are in the process of building entire businesses just around clients who own lots of Bitcoin. And that also is a challenge because we're not at a level where Bitcoin is so large, you know, that it's really a lot of customers today. There will be far, you know, a lot more customers in future as Bitcoin reaches its potential, as it gets bigger and bigger, as it gets to multiple trillions in value for the network. But it's still early days. So I guess probably from personal experience, I could say, you know, there's a lot of challenging businesses in Bitcoin. I think there's very few that have resulted in great outcomes for equity holders, you know, or employees, if I'm honest about it. It's surprisingly difficult to build a business, but I'm curious, you know, I'm curious your perspective. I guess I'll make one amendment there too, which is also, you know, the podcast business. And there have been some successes there. You know, my personal experience doing a pod for OnRamp was, it was a lot of fun for me. And I was, you know, I got to talk to many of the best people, or what I consider to be the best people in the space.
Yeah, awesome. I listened to some episodes. But it was great. I loved hearing you doing it.
I appreciate that. And, but on the other hand, yeah, it's getting to scale is a challenge. And yes, there are, you know, there are some who make a good living at it, but it's a pretty short list. Now, I think you could pull it off. I have considered going solo, i.e. not doing it affiliated with a company.
Go solo, baby. Come on.
I've been enjoying spending more time with my kids. I got three of them.
Yeah, fair enough.
So eventually I'll get restless enough, you know, to do something work-wise again in Bitcoin. But right now I'm on the beach in terms of my Bitcoin activities.
Great.
At the moment.
But the fun thing there is, like, first of all, you got to try, right? I mean, that whole old school phrase of, like, you don't fail, you learn. And all those experiences may not have, for both of us, may not have played out as initially intended. It's like, oh, shit, how did that happen? That's not quite what I was thinking. But you get so much more from it than you realize. And so without the action, you don't get the clarity. And I think that's undersold in a way. It's like, that's actually incredibly important. The other thing, obviously, is, you know, since 2019, the Bitcoin price itself has performed very nicely. And so your $3,000 that you might have been paying for Bitcoin back in 2019 at 80 something or 75 or whatever it might be today, that's actually done pretty bloody well. So in my mind, it's like all of these entrepreneurial endeavors, it's like we're trying to take old business models and shove them onto Bitcoin, because that's what you do, isn't it? With new markets and new technology. But actually, is that really necessary in 10 years' time? Are people actually going to use that stuff? And so that's a big question I have about that. So you can't just chuck the old stuff onto something new, because it might not even be needed. But what's also true, though, is it gives us more space and time to do things that we actually want. And in some ways, that's what this revamp podcast is all about, because life isn't just about money. It's not just about making investment returns. It's like spending time with your children is actually an incredible investment. So if you're able to accumulate Bitcoin and you're able to spend enough time holding it, then your purchasing power increases such that you now have the ability to go and choose what you want to do. So just for yourself, Andy, do you feel like you've gone through that process and continue to do so? And, like, if you were really like, what do I actually want to do with my time? What would you answer?
Yeah. So this is a little bit of a loaded question, and I go back and forth. This is one of the hardest questions that I struggle with on a daily basis, which is, you know, as an example, my day job, fiat job, you know, what's the future of that business? Should I spend time investing my time in that business? My answer so far on that has been, you know, I've kind of stopped selling, so to speak. I don't pursue clients. If I find somebody, if they come to me and I think it's a great fit, basically, if a really great relationship, you know, falls into my lap or develops over time, okay, I'll work with them and be their advisor. But frankly, yeah, I'm sort of responding to inbound, but not, not marketing outbound. So that's one factor. Another factor I go back and forth on is, you know, should I spend a bunch of my time just learning more about AI, because that's kind of eating the economy, you know? Should I get a lot better at playing around with the various LLMs and figuring out how those can help me in my day-to-day life, or create interesting content, you know, or help me leverage new business opportunities? And then I got the draw on my on the family time, which is, I think I'm quite a bit happier. I know my wife's happier with me being more involved with the with the family and the kids. And example, we've got a trip planned that we're doing Disney World. God help me. Cool. You know, I probably in a different time in my life, I either, you know, either that trip wouldn't have happened or I would have, you know, just sent her with her parents to watch after the kids and I'd stay and mind the farm. But mind the shop. So yeah, this is, and then there's a question of, oh, you know, are markets throwing up trading or investment opportunities? You know, how much of my time should I be spending on that? How much of my time should I spend on asset allocation, both for myself and for my clients, when, you know, on the one hand, there's so much volatility that there probably are opportunities, but on the other hand, with so much, with so many algos investing at this point, it's like, are you really likely to find alpha? Investment alpha, I think, is getting harder and harder to come by. So this is my long-winded answer is, I don't know the answer. It's a question that I'm really struggling
every
with
day. Yeah.
Every day on a day-to-day basis. And in a world of rapid change and wild geopolitics, yeah, it's a lot to manage. I got to believe that there are many like me struggling in the same regard as we speak.
But do you feel like versus 5 years ago, you have more options when it comes to what?
I mean, of course, obviously anyone who holds Bitcoin through a couple of market cycles and doesn't get shaken out, you know, things have gone well for them. So, I don't get too specific about, you know, obviously my net worth or financial position or anything like that. But suffice to say that, as you pointed out, yes, things have gone well for the purchasing power of Bitcoin in the last number of years. And my expectation is that's likely to continue.
Well, we actually had our third child. He is now 6 months old. So I've got a 4.5-year-old, 2.5, and 6 months. So when I'm not podcasting, that's what I'm doing, basically, is just being a dad. And it's an incredible experience that I'm so grateful to have, in particular because I have the time to actually be at home doing it. And that's very unique. Like, my father certainly wasn't doing that. And for that, I have to thank Bitcoin. And you're right, it takes a couple of years. It's not going to be that whole idea of, like, don't get poor slowly, rather than the get rich schemes that are sold like left, right, and center on YouTube. Well, Andy, awesome. It's been so good to catch up. Thank you for your time. I will close it out as we're coming up towards the hour mark now. If there's any kind of closing remarks that you have, I'd love to hear them. And equally, like, if people want to reach out and get in touch, how can they do that?
Yeah, of course. I guess I'll give you my Twitter handle is @EdstromAndrew. I think the DMs are open. Or you can email me, andy@westcapgroup.com. Final thoughts are, yeah, this is a long-term game, in my humble opinion. This is an area where the highest return is on learning how Bitcoin works. And so I just encourage people to continue on their learning journey. I've been on it for 7+ years. I'm still learning new things every day. Not only does Bitcoin provide a new lens on the operation of everything in the world, whether it's tech or politics or the economy or geopolitics or anything else, it's also helped me examine priorities in my life and wrestle in positive ways with how I spend my time. So keep learning, keep reading, keep listening, read books, whether it's mine or anyone else's, listen to Jake's podcast, listen to other podcasts, keep diving down the Bitcoin rabbit hole because it's pretty deep and I still haven't found the bottom.
No, it's the endless discussion. Well, Andy, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure, Jake. Great seeing you. Thanks.